You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hey.
Niall.
I'm back, baby.
And me, Brian, using my very few last breaths on Earth to get through this podcast, as I have a horrible... Well, it's a much better cough today than it was yesterday, because I went and got some medicine. Yesterday, I went to the pharmacist, and I said, have you got anything for this cough? And then proceeded to double over, disappearing below the register. I was like,
and then that sounds like a comedy bit. Like, have you got anything for imminent death? Immediately yeah. falls. Yeah.
And they gave me
a
small bottle of Robitussin, chesty cough medicine. It does the job. I tell you that.
Are you high off your tits with it, or
no? I think it is the sort that you get people going in and trying to convince people that they are ill in order to say.
Whereas you could just go in and just be ill. So,
yes, that was half the job done. Trick. but yeah, I've just taken 10 milliliters of it, and we'll see how much that staves off a cough during the podcast. So I don't have a mute button on this new mixer, so I'll just have to turn myself down. So hopefully the levels will be relatively fine. They seem to be okay in the Tascam, actually. It seems to pick us all up at roughly the same levels now. As long as I remember to hit the record button twice, which is what I forgot to do on that Dynamite in the Brain recording. I was scurrying around asking Anthony and Niall for, did you record it? Because I managed to fail to record it on the MP3 Skype recorder. On the Tascam.
Well, we have it anyway.
So, yeah. It just didn't sound quite as nice as I would like it to.
But sorry.
No. It's not your. Nobody's fault but my own. Right, this week's reviews. We are covering anime airing from August the 28th to September the 3rd, with the solitary exception of Bono Bono, of which we are still 13 weeks behind.
A whole month of anime. Wow, God.
And so we begin with Picotaro's Lullaby Lullaby, Episode 5, The Emperor's New Clothes, which isn't really about the Emperor's New Clothes at all. It is about Picotaro.
It's about ignoring the crazy man. Yeah.
Yes. By speaking to an even crazier man.
He's less obviously crazy that from the true. Look of him, despite the golden robes and everything.
The main two topics appear to be Picotaro's first love and first kiss. And the sport that he does that he can't, which involves a horse, and he can't remember the name of it.
They're both really good bits, because it's just like the guy going, "It's like, really, that's really interesting." And it's like, okay, no, that's completely wrong. You know,
that doesn't involve a horse. And it's not a sport.
It's a pastime. It's not a sporting competition. Dear, this show is still pretty great. Also, I did like the fact that the king was listening into the conversation and trying to one-up him.
Yes.
That was pretty great, too.
Would you go to that thing as well he's talking about? Oh, yeah.
There was one joke I had to look up, which was when he's talking about how his first love was
his friend's granny or something.
His friend's granny, and then the other guy he's talking to, a bit like the Petagain situation. I was like, okay. I'm sure that's a guy who everybody in Japan knows, and he's a baseball player who married his best friend's mum when he was 23. And he's still married to her, so obviously worked for him.
Good for them.
Yeah.
But it seems slightly different in Picotaro's case, because granny.
Yes, it was his granny, and we learned later on he had his first kiss at age 40, which was also his first love.
Like, wouldn't you ignore this guy walking down the street in his pants shot and things to hear about this real-life oddity? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And also, I now realise that the opening is not the anime in bed with him. It's his real... It's the guy who is Picotaro in bed with him.
He's talking to himself?
Yes.
Okay, that's really confusing.
I don't know how they are presented. I believe he's presented as, like, his manager or something.
But it's just the same guy.
Yeah, it's just the same guy. But I think there's like a fictional connection that he's drawn between the two of them and sort of pretends that they're not the same guy. Even though clearly everybody would know that they are the same guy.
Well, I mean, like the tiny fake mustache is going to fool a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's been waiting years to get this character in on the air because he couldn't do that bit in real life because he had to just run in and out of doors in costumes real quick. Just wasn't as effective as animation.
Yeah. Also, the animator had been doing those Trump cartoons on the Koro Koro YouTube channel as well.
Okay.
I think there's a couple of them up. It's based on a strip in Koro Koro. I don't know if he's responsible for that as well. I didn't look any further. It does not treat the President of the United States with very much respect.
Good.
Well, he kind of asked for it.
Yes. I believe there was the thing on Anime News Network. I think he's like, is he spinning a fidget spinner on his dick? Something along those lines. Anyway, I know from this cartoon that the Trump stand-in, who's not called Trump, but he's a kid who looks exactly like Trump, behaves like Trump, but is going to an elementary school. Every single episode, I've only seen, there is only two I've seen, involves his trousers falling down at some point.
I'm seeing double here. Four Trumps.
Yeah. And then he engages in a rap.
Sounds good.
And then the final punchline is that his hair turns out to be something which isn't hair.
Like candy floss or something.
No, I can't remember what the first one is. In the... I think the first one is his bento box. And in the second one, it's like a martial arts movie, Secret Hidden Weight, that he was carrying all this time.
Right, the training weights. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Weighted hairpiece.
Yes. Excuse me while I cough.
You're excused.
Right. Anything else to add for Picotaro?
Nope. Short, sweet, fun.
Bono Bono, episode 10. It's tough being a father. In which we learn how tough it is being Wolverine's dad.
We get some Wolverine characterization beside him just pooping. I mean, like, he does poop, don't get me wrong.
Oh, he does. You better believe he does.
I mean, like, that's all we've known him for, so obviously he's going to do that at least once.
I did not know he'd be such a little whitey fecker, though. Yes. I thought Wolverine was supposed to be tough. But I suppose that's a joke, isn't it?
Yeah, and I also wonder whether the joke is that he's, like, the one animal who continues to wander around on all fours when everybody else is wandering around on their hind legs.
It's like a red development.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bit of a wimpy kid. He makes Bono Bono look tough.
I did like the way he was comparing himself to... Look, Bono Bono couldn't catch that rock. And it's like, it's not about Bono Bono.
Bono can catch it. He knows, get his own food at least. We're trying to teach you.
I don't think he does, actually.
No, I believe that is a plot of an upcoming episode.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why he carries that seashell everywhere in case he starves to death.
Yes. An upcoming episode involves a character we've not met yet being asked to teach... Bono Bono asks him to teach him how to catch fish.
Yeah, but it's Wolverine just being kind of a crappy little kid, and Wolverine's dad like showing that he's competent but has no patience.
Yes, but also he stops it. He gets annoyed at himself that he lost his temper with his son.
He gets mad straight away.
Yes,
like right after. Understandably mad, but it's kind of like it's not going to get you anywhere, dude. We've established that.
But yeah, that was the bit which reminded me of Peppa Pig, of this kid's program also doubling as being also teaching parents how to behave.
It seems like it's written for the parents a lot of the time, and obviously this episode especially so. It's written from the parents' point of view. Yeah,
it's a good little episode. Get some focus on different characters.
Yeah, I like what it does a bit more of that. When was the last time we did something like this?
I mean, like, I know Bono and his dad had a thing of trying to teach Bono how to catch fish, and Bono could barely swim underwater with his eyes open or something like that. Yeah,
it feels like there's been lots of the main guys of late in the episodes we're watching. What do we have? Let me just scroll back a bit. Most of these have got one or other of the main three characters in the thumbnails.
It's nice to get... I think the last one with, like, side guys was just... was it Bono's dad and... one of Chipmunk Sisters. And it was basically just
yes.
characters who you wouldn't hear have a conversation. All of a sudden, they're having a conversation.
Yeah, Sis has a problem. It was the last episode of the first season.
Yeah, that was a good one as well. It is nice to focus on some of the other guys.
And finally for the shorts, it's Ninja Girl and Samurai Master episode 48, Forever With My Lord. In which Nobunaga's little sister contemplates her role in the world and decides that she's going to stay with her husband rather than return to her brother.
Yeah, and he's got it all planned out and is like, okay, I actually had a wife from a prior thing, but we have to get divorced because the clans changed or the alliances changed, that kind of thing. So I was like, I'm going to separate with you so you won't get hurt in this upcoming thing. And she's like, sticking with you, dude. I got a kid with you. Come on.
Yeah. She makes a bunch of serious points. And then you get the joke of, plus she'd be a twice divorced 26-year-old. Terrible look.
Old two divorced Nagamasa. That's what I'll call you from now on.
Oh, dear.
And then
her fan club.
Watch Association.
Yeah. Which just keeps getting bigger.
Her husband's plan to deal with Nobunaga is to get more muscular. And of course, he rips his shirt off again by flexing. And then we go back to Nobunaga and Mitsuhide, and they're planning on how they're going to get around. Is it the Akai clan?
Yeah, they have to go through this certain Murakako pass, and there's a guy hiding out in there. But that shouldn't be a major problem. Surely he's not going to cause us any trouble, is he?
No.
Yes, always. Ninja friend who Chidori beat previously, and we know, as discussed, will eventually end buried up to his neck with a saw beside it. But I don't think that's for another 3 years yet, so.
I mean, how they're going to make that into comedy.
I'm coming up to the 10-year siege now.
Yes, we're coming up to
that.
Yeah,
I think so.
And I think some certain characters handle that, and then other people are off doing more important sieges elsewhere, which don't take quite so long.
Yeah, if it's the same siege, it will not end well for the brother-in-law. I'll tell you that now.
Oh no, not Muscle Boy.
Oh yeah, I don't think he's got much time left on the planet.
Oh,
he's too beautiful for his world.
Well,
but we'll see, because I don't know how long this is going, whether this is, they've not mentioned it picking up again, so it may well be ending in,
I mean, like, I suppose if you like the show and the characters, you probably want it to not get picked up again so you don't get to see them killed off.
But the comic is continuing, and I hadn't realised it runs in Young Animal, so I suppose, which explains the dirty old man character being as dirty as he is. But it could also explain how bloody it is, and then maybe yes, it will have that guy's head being sawn off
for comedy.
I'm guessing probably 52 episodes on this. Don't know for sure. Doesn't feel like it's wrapping up yet.
Yeah,
does it? But as I said last week, he's got that thing with Aguchi that he's working on. And his other project, which is about a robot ninja girl.
Ninja Girl Samurai Master 3000.
Something like that, yes. He was doing, I can't remember where it was, but there was like, what's the word for female ninja? Kunoichi.
Kunoichi.
Yeah, there was like a day celebrating them that some town does, and so he was down there with one of the voice actresses and somebody else doing a talk show.
Promoting the many ninja girl things that he does.
Okay, next up, the thing that does 5 weeks of anime in 1 week. It is Magical Circle Guruguru episode 8. I'm not sure there was a title because there was no opening credits and there was no closing credits.
It just didn't bother. We got too much time.
I don't know where it fitted in, but I have the note taken reunion. Catanog, Catanguay Valley.
I'm oh yes, Catantong. It's like Catong
Cat
is the pun that it's.
Okay, I see it now. Yeah, I couldn't figure out the pun. I separated.
Yes,
it
I think you're right. Reunion being in it because they meet back up with Toma from North Village,
who remains a boring character despite joining the party.
Yeah, and also he's like 8 levels ahead of them.
He's like level 10 or something ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
He's a level 10 magical architect, which isn't as cool as the other roles.
I guess less use in combat, but presumably from this episode, more like he'll get us out of this situation, which we currently can't get out of. Yeah.
So this takes us, based on the previous series, I believe the end of this takes us to the end of episode 5 of season 2 of the original
show. Whoa!
We're on season 2 now, okay.
I think the entire back half of the first season is all filler. It's all non-canonical stuff.
Oh, okay.
And even season 2 didn't get through the entire comic, so...
Well, I mean, like, they're doing a good job of trying to get through it at this rate.
I wonder if they're getting through this so fast, for one, because there's no more time for watching it that long anymore, but also as well, we could let you run for a massively long length, or you could do all this in a single series, and then we can have something new in your slot next season. How about that?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, one of the big time savers, I went back and watched some more episodes, is that the in-game text in the original had a narrator who read it out.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, and it just goes like... Brr, brr. Here, it just does the the fast scroll speed that you've set the RPG to. So, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I think that is the key factor in getting through the canonical material.
Sometimes I have to rewind and just go, I did not see what that thing said. It went by so quickly.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those texts was just like, the straight... kind of straight man character who would explain the joke. So it's like, I would prefer it to just like be a flashing up message that I barely get this to read anyway.
Okay.
That's a big problem I have with Japanese kind of comedy. They have to have that guy who has to react to the joke and be the straight man and explain the whole fun punchline to it. Whereas if you just trust your eyes, just let it breathe for a second, it'll probably pick up on it.
So what they did a lot in this episode.
Yeah, I'm trying to put it in order.
So there's loads of people being sent by the king to seek out.
This valley. Because there's
hidden tower.
Yes. That's it, yes. Yeah, there's a hidden tower somewhere in this valley of spikes it's like a guru or something. I forgot what the term they use.
It's one of the spirits that, I forget, either Kukuri or Nike have to converse with to achieve your destiny.
Yeah, because Nike's got to speak to the elemental lords, four elemental lords, and Kukuri's got to speak to the various demons and befriend them so she can summon them. I can't remember which one this one is.
It's Siren.
It is Siren, but I can't remember whether that's the air elemental lord or whether it's one of the demons.
Right, okay.
Forget you.
No, but there's a big chunk of it is where they set up a shop to... because they need to earn money to get training from another weird old man.
Yeah, because he'll only train them if he likes them, and the only way he can think of to get them to like him is for them to pay him an exorbitant amount of fucking money. And it's reminded me... what's the Dragon Quest where you play as a shopkeeper for one part of it, and then he comes back later, and I can't fucking think of it.
Okay.
It was reminding me of that, but anyway, yeah.
Never played a Dragon Quest.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But I can believe that being a reference to this or that, or this being a reference to that.
Yeah, probably.
I like how the idea doesn't work out at first, but then rather than go up with a different Z plan, they just try again.
Just keep plugging it the same time. Yeah.
Well, yes, they make Old Man North go as far away as possible, and so he doesn't have anything to do with it. Because he was working fine. And even the things he was making were fine. It was when they revealed how they were being made.
Yeah.
Yes, he was making rice cakes by squeezing them under his armpits.
And dancing pretty hard. So, there's got to be some old man sweat in there. It's not good.
But people thought they were delicious until they knew how they were being made.
Yeah, it's because it's salty umami flavor. Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
I like the way the old man is essentially like a party member that nobody wants.
Yes, because they won't, they don't admit that he's a party member.
No.
But he's there all the time with them now.
He's there all the time. He keeps kind of helping, but also kind of ruining everything.
They meet this old man because he hangs out with these monsters who like to take your clothes off.
That was weird.
That was weird. That was the bit I was trying to see whether or not it was in the original series, but it was in series two, and I don't have that on my computer.
Yeah. Right. In fairness, it wasn't just who you would expect it to happen to. It happened to everybody. No, so
it did, yes.
Yeah.
At least there was equal opportunity harassment.
Hey, and the monsters put clothes back on you as well after they take your clothes
off. Yeah, they wanted to put you in a ridiculous costume is why they took your
clothes
off.
Which I presume are going to be, by the end, I guess that's traditional Migu Migu clothing.
Right. Because it would fit into the fact that like other people's magic is fucking farcical as well. Yeah.
Yes. Also, Raid's been sent with that wizard who they kicked out the...
I don't know if he's... He definitely had a name, right? Because they was like, oh, it's that creepy old guy. And I was like, yeah, that's the only name I remember him as
begins
well.
Begins with an S. I can't remember what it is.
Okay. The guy with the big eyes.
He is.
Hmm.
And yeah, so at the end, after they get past this clay golem using Thomas' gadgets, because... Oh, well, yeah, we guess you go what their training is. They learn what character classes they've got. And
your man needs to awaken their potential by pretending to be them.
Yes, he dresses as them and then they'll possess his body.
Yeah.
So he can learn what their potential is.
And it levels you up one level, so that's pretty good.
Yes, and his costumes are pretty accurate as well.
Good cast there.
And then the horrified to learn that Nike is not, there is no character class called Hero. He is in fact a thief.
Really? I had no fucking idea.
I think it's the bandanas and the knife that
running
that's
away
his...
from stuff, being a sneaky little prick. All ends up money hungry, lecherous.
I did like the quick thing of your man's just his little chibi head reacting to it's like, this guy's thing was too boring, so we decided to cut this scene. And I'm like,
yes.
And he's just like, oh, sorry, dude, you're a main character, but you're not that main.
Well, they also learned that Gipple can be used as a bag of holding.
Oh, it's a super gross bag of holding, though. I don't think, I mean, like, Gipple's useful, but I don't think he's worth keeping around, you know?
It's for something that convenient and useful, it has to be some kind of trade-off in return.
I guess, yeah. A tent anywhere you want, but you got to look at his butt. Dear.
But it all ends up with them plummeting. He tries to do his hero pose so they can float again, but doesn't do the job.
Mm.
But they end up inside some Migu Migu ruins. Which seems to also be occupied by those weird furry monsters whose names I forgot. Yeah. And of course, there was loads of other stuff that we've forgotten.
Oh, God, yeah, a lot fucking happens in it.
It's an insane show. It's amazing. Because it fits half an hour's content in 5 minutes and then does it five times in an episode.
Yeah, it feels like it should be a short. But it just packs that much in, yeah.
It also does fly by, like,
but
there are times where I think, like, it's had to be everyone saying, okay, it's going to end, like, about my stage where it's just a stop right now. Oh, there's 10 more minutes left. It's just going to keep going. Or I think it's about to end, but then all of a sudden you get to, like, the midpoint eye catch. It's like, oh, it's been that, it's only that much time left? Oh my gosh. I understand that people may not be able to maybe put up on the pacing wise, something a little bit more relaxed and measured out. But I've gotten used to this. Maybe just by having so much Ninja Gurren Master like pumped into my eyeballs over the last couple of months, I've quite acclimatized to this kind of pacing.
That's like you're saying, Brian. I think if it was done at something close to the old pace, people might drop off the show a lot quicker. Or at least you'd be more inclined to, like you said, we're all of a sudden fucking five episodes into season two somehow. That's mad.
The pace it feels like it's rewriting the book on how to pace comedies, because I went back and tried to watch Miku Fighting Raymond this week while I was off ill, and I was like, this is nowhere near as madcap as I remember it being.
Hmm.
And I was like, is it just because it isn't as madcap as I remember it being, or is it because Guru Goo has rewritten my brain, and so therefore this pace is no longer acceptable to me?
You'd only accept shows in fast forward from now on, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. Hey Bots, episode 47. Everything becomes N. In which the entire episode is given over to an affectionate parody of The Thing. And also explaining what is going on in the show, sort of. A little bit more.
Well, this is my kind of episode, so I love both of those things.
So, it's a big parody of The Thing, except instead of a thing, it is Nejiru is the thing in this case. So people are being turned into Nejiru. And you can tell when they've been turned into Nejiru because they get his cowlick. And okay. We discover that every 100,000 years, history repeats itself, and there's a new Haybot and a new Nejiru in the next version of the universe, which I assume is supposed to be like the turn of a screw.
Okay.
So obviously, if you went up on the thread of this, the screw of the universe, you'd be in the previous or the next version.
So it's being screwed out.
And they say it's getting screwed tighter.
Oh, okay.
So I think this is possibly the last turn of the screw before. There's like a black Haybot, which is here, which has been sent to turn everything into Nejiru. We learn that Nejiru isn't actually the king and the queen's son. He was given to them by Aldis to raise. And that Nejiru's brother's cowlick is actually a hair extension that he wears to try and convince Nejiru that he is actually his brother, that they're part of the same family.
Okay.
So that's where they are. But Nejiru, of course, yeah, he doesn't care that he's not really, because they're family, so they're their family. The Haybot's family, and then the kind of questioning... There's also questioning, why is this the start of the end of the series? All the other good... My favourite joke is the pre... Because they go and inspect this Antarctic expedition camp, which had been previously occupied by other characters from the show, who are still there wandering around, just nobody seems to be able to notice that they're there. And they see their calendar, and their calendar is all Sundays. There's nothing else but Sundays, because, of course, Haybot airs on Sunday. I'm not sure where it goes now, so we know a little bit more. We're getting a little bit each week now, and I guess it's just going to carry on over week by week until we actually pull off the ending. Whatever that might be. I kind of get the feeling... because the other thing was, in this episode, is like loads of little details from previous episodes, which you thought were just a weird, stupid detail in a weird, stupid show, in a weird, stupid episode, actually may have some pertinent meaning to the overall story.
Oh my gosh.
Because the first episode, which introduced the Murakami parody character, the dinosaur from Japan...
Mm.
Who travelled to Screw Island to see this ritual activity they do every year about the screwing unscrewing of the big screw. Well, at the end of the episode, that is being... There's still some of the black Nejirus have escaped and they're climbing all over that. And so, are they trying to screw it in or unscrew it? What are they up to? There's an actual cliffhanger to find out next week. But of course, this is Haybot, so there's a chance they'll just ignore that and do something else.
Right.
Right, next up. I'm trying to think what to do. I think the worst thing out of this remaining main lot is Dragon Ball Super episode 106. Find him, deathmatch with an invisible attacker.
Some interesting bits, but not quite was promised. No. Yeah.
Like,
it
took, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Took 5 of you guys to take this guy out.
Two guys.
Oh, 3 guys if you include Doctor. What's his face?
He never got to use his power. That was joke.
Yes,
he never got to explain why he's called Doctor.
Side at the end, though.
Involved holding people. That's as much as we know.
Yeah. Because he was really holding on to that guy.
Also forgot he was a Universe 6 guy, so that was just... My point wasn't that impressive next to, like, Kappa and Connie Flan and all those other dudes. So.
Yeah, I'm just filling out the numbers.
Mm.
Yep. Yeah, so this it was four eliminations this week. With two from Universe 2, we got Hermelia and Prom, or Prom, who were sniping people by one of them shooting the other one who had reflective skin.
And the other one can make like little bubbles that he can see through?
Yeah.
So doing trick shots, essentially.
That's the whole thing, that the guy doing the actual kind of aiming, really, was the fat blubbery dude making all the bubbles and things. Because, like, all the guy, other guys do is to shoot the beam. Then, like, other fellow will do all the real work. But I feel it would have been a more effective thing if you had just maybe put those two guys together as one character, you know, as a guy who was able to do the trick shots, you know, because he's able to counter both himself. That would have been a more interesting encounter.
I think that was trying to play up the mystery of it, because it's like, oh, you're actually going for the wrong guy here. You need to go for the guy further back. The kind of way that it's not you just beat this one guy and you've won. You need to beat both of them, or the guy who's actually able to shoot things, as Vegeta and Goku suddenly realize they could just throw rocks at him.
Yes, that was probably the highlight of this. But also, if it was one character, you could have made him a more obvious Golgo 13 parody.
Yeah. Like, I was expecting a kind of really more kind of tense fucking enemy at the gates, the end boss battle from Metal Gear Solid 3 type of situation here, but I didn't really get that vibe of it at all.
Yeah, and it was setting it up so that it was kind of Gohan and Piccolo versus these, what we find out is two guys, but actually one guy. But then they would just spend the rest of the episode not doing anything while Tien and Goku and fucking Vegeta do all the rest of the work. And I'm just like, but you set it up as their fucking fight. All right, fine.
I thought, for Piccolo's like the kind of cunning guy who's going to pull all the tricks. This is like the ideal time for him to shine.
Sure.
It was Master Mushigan episode and fucking Gohan's episode a little while ago. I gave him Krillin a little bit of the time as well. The Android Sam, give Piccolo a chance to do something. No, he's just getting his arm shot.
I saw your scoreboard, Brian.
Yeah, I know. I'm because when I saw them at the start and I'd heard that, oh, it's a thin guy and a fat guy, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to be fighting the guys from Universe 6, the Nameks from Universe 6. So
yeah.
A thin guy and a fat guy. I thought that would make sense for Piccolo, and then it turned out to be less interesting character designs and also not them doing it. But Tien's plan of just running.
Until I run out of clones.
Yes.
With my 9 eyes, 6 eyes, I'll totally find it. dear.
Not that hot an episode. Next week looks a lot more interesting, though. It's Frost and Roshi again, by the sounds.
So we got some interesting things, because like Frieza and Frost have been just kind of like off, up to no good, presumably this entire time.
Yeah, I found the page on the wiki which has got all the, which is just the Tournament of Power thing, and has like the list of who got erased.
Oh, it's constantly been
eliminated
updated,
in
sure.
Which order? Mm. Yeah. So that's handy. Bookmarked that, so I know. And that's where I got those results from that I stuck on.
I know you're saying Piccolo has like the lowest things, but I think he's like the goalie position right now, so he's not getting much of the credit for getting his arms blasted off over and over again. Like, none of the other guys have lost at least 3 arms this tournament so far.
You know, the other guys can regenerate their fucking limbs back, I'll tell you that much.
He's taking arms for the team, you know?
But looking at the stats, I was like, it's got to come down to Universe 6 and 7 at the end.
You think?
Because none of the other universes, are anywhere the threat that Universe 6
but there's
and 7
Goku
are.
Constantly eyeing up that sexy purple boy with, the, like, it's like, he hasn't done anything yet, so you know when he does something, it's going to be really cool. And I'm just like, I'm so sick of fucking, what's it, Jiren at this stage. I'm just like, do something, you fucker. Yeah.
Over half the people have been eliminated so far.
Yeah.
A lot of them for Universe 11. The favorites going in. I think they have like a similar situation to fucking what Universe 7 had, where you had like guys like Goku and Vegeta really strong wife, and I guess like when Yamcha and Pu'er throwing the average off, I say Jiren's are the one top, Jiren and top one, and this board are the top dudes. Everybody else rubbish, throwing off the average altogether.
yeah, it seems to be that kind of situation. All right.
Yeah, because it's only Universe 2, 6, 7, and 9. Oh, and yeah, and 9 have eliminated anybody.
It was 9. Like,
everybody else.
It was 9. The Dog Man.
Basil. Basil was the first. He eliminated the first person.
Yeah.
Came in strong and then went out very, very weak. Yeah, so it's weird when you look at the stats. So it's like it's got to come down to Cabba, Cauliflower, Kale, Goku, Vegeta, and then I'm guessing your big bull bastard from Universe 11. Probably Brienne, because she's in the credits and she's the only one. Well, there's three people have eliminated in Universe 2, though one of them has since been eliminated himself.
So. Mm.
But yeah, it's weirdly lopsided towards the guys we know as being the main eliminators, which is I think a little bit of a missed opportunity to introduce. But maybe these universes are going to remain erased, and so therefore you don't want to spend a lot of time introducing these people.
I don't know. I mean, like, even if you only talk about the guy who's an honorable warrior and can disguise his key and that kind of shit, it's like, yeah, but then you show he had a family and then you erase the universe. It's like, I don't think that's really depressing if that's the one they're going to go for. Like, our heroes, the killers of billions.
We shall see. Okay, next up, let's go with Rage of Bahamut 20, From Heaven to Hell. An episode which is entirely really about the couple of minutes after the credits.
Can you imagine, right, if you just went, oh, credits are on, whew, can't wait to watch that next week, and you turned it off then? Because, like, I can't not think about just that bit after the credits now, and it's corrupting everything else in the episode. Because I was like, this episode's going this direction, this episode's going this direction, this episode's going this direction. Fuck no, it's not. It's gone a completely different way. I have no idea what's going to happen now.
It's all gone haywire on us. Just ignore Lester's events.
Well, I'm not sure it is.
I know.
I think there's something it's saying about the type of man Alisand is.
Yeah.
And it's not saying nice things about the type of man he is. Because obviously he was going on constantly how in the early episodes how Jean was his ideal woman.
Yeah, his inspiration and also what he wanted.
And I wonder if there's something about, oh no, she's got a child. That has ruined her in his head.
Yeah, it could be something as fucking twisted as that, alright, yeah.
Yeah. Because he definitely hears in this episode that that's her child, doesn't he? Yeah.
I did like the way we see again from the last episode where while it is you can see his arc that this is everything kind of that he wanted. He wanted to be in with John, he wanted to be doing something honorable, all that kind of jazz. But it's shot from behind, his point of view is shot from behind your man's back because he's not involved in the conversation. And there's a bit I think where like three characters like fly away and he's just stood there standing, it's like fuck, you know, he's just completely left behind. This has nothing to do with him. He's not important and he doesn't fucking matter. And I think that kind of speaks to the end as well. Yeah,
I think you're right. Because the thing which goes over in his head just before he kills or stabs, because who's to say that they're dead, is that like, oh, he goes back over the conversation he had with the Onyx Knight, who also dismissed.
Yeah, again, you don't fucking matter. That kind of thing, yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Well, he was about to sell them out to the Onyx Knights, though, from before, because it's like...
Yeah, I think that was maybe the Onyx Knights going, was like, geez, you don't even stand by your own guys. I mean, like, we're not going to let a betrayer motherfucker into our ranks, that kind of thing.
They'd be right not to, but there's just little things.
Yeah,
like,
no, they'd be quite right, based off this episode, not to let him in. Oh, dear.
Yeah, because you have to assume that the Onyx Knights think what they're doing is for the right
well,
reason.
Your man keeps saying it's like, he doesn't keep going, it's like, haha, I will rule the king. He's like, everything he thinks he's doing, I'm following the king's orders. I'm making sure the king, what the king wants to get done is getting done. He obviously believes in what the king is getting done. I think he's just afraid the king might be having second thoughts.
Yes. Yeah. But of course, we don't know. Because he was going to tell Nina, and then he didn't.
Yeah.
And so therefore, as the viewers, we also don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind Chayotche just being having a little bit more of an idea of what's going on in there. Because I know they're trying to play subtle, but I tend to being a bit too subtle with it.
Sure.
You know? I wouldn't mind, because I've just seen too much from being this kind of stone faced mark. I know he's trying to like play it cool that way, but it's it's hard to kind of empathize with him. It will be hard to empathize with him when this eventually all comes out, and it better be good, because whatever this is, it would want to be like a hell of a payoff.
Or that it's so bad that Nina gives him a massive punch in the face.
I mean, that would feel it's good, yeah.
That would be also
not that it's
be a
evil,
good payoff.
But that it's such a weak reason.
Yeah, like, you piece of shit. I think I'd be fine with it being really, really bad in that case. You're quite right, Brian. I was going to say, I agree with you, Niall, but I also agree with you, Brian. Those would be the perfect way to go.
I want it to be something very, very strong in either direction. Either it's
ultimately
fucking evil and bad, or it's ultimately kind of a tragic thing before.
You can see his point of view.
Yeah.
Oh, you see, I'm not saying that evil or bad. I'm saying that he's doing it for something as pathetic as, oh, my mum died.
Revenge.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I mean, something really weak, personal, and petty.
Yeah.
Like with all those other anime villains done, and then this is just like a sounding board for those kind of lame-ass, fucking hacky plot lines.
Yes, because then the point would become not his point, but how everyone would react to such
a ridiculous
point,
especially when a lot of people are getting like their fucking worldviews shattered in various different regards. Yes. Yeah,
because you know, even if Nina didn't, Favreau and Kaiser are gonna react.
Because
Kaiser's trying to save the king from himself out of the goodness
of his own
heart.
Left the Black Knights alive because he's like, I'm not a rebel, I'm actually trying to help the king here. I'm trying to help him do the right thing because he's a good guy. I mean, like, yeah.
And also because they've been through an apocalypse once themselves. So.
Not again. Favreau definitely being a lot more pragmatic. After Kaiser tried to open the last night's sky and saying, Tim, you'll be sorry you did that now. Because they're going to come back again. And they're going to do the exact same thing they did just now. And even in the last episode where Charity says, the bracelet won't come off my arm. Well, I'll take your arm off then. Okay, no problem.
Oh, and there's a fight with a huge dragon.
Yeah, it was fucking guy. Yeah, he wasn't.
I didn't expect him to turn into a dragon, and then kind of like, it's one thing to see like Nina get beaten by a dragon, but it was more so just her just being heartbroken, and then trying to cover that up. That kind of like hit me more so than her fighting a giant dragon. That I was like, oh no, poor Nina.
I also wasn't expecting Azazel to fly straight down the dragon's mouth.
That was pretty fucking sweet.
Explode him.
What's that fucking thing where it's like the contest of like who can kill him the most? Where Azazel angel is kind of like
Sophiel is
just like, I'm fucking going to kill him. It's like, what are you talking about? I'm fucking the biggest badass here.
We'll both kill him. Wham.
They both like fucking like double, triple kill him.
Tango and Cash.
So they get a good bit of a kind of interplay between them, which is nice. I did like the reversal of your man's thing. Was like, oh, you're just a half dragon, fucking being the human's lapdog. And Azazel was like, he's just a half demon giving into being the freaking human's lapdog. And I was like, yeah, he's literally working for the man here. I think Nina's in the right, just trying to justify it for himself, maybe.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they wrap it up. Within however many episodes they've given themselves, or if they do, or whether they just tease another season.
No.
I'd like for them to wrap this up and then like move on to something very different. That seems to be something they do okay, or something they do quite well.
That's
true.
Or they could stop the king doing from whatever he wanted to do, and then learn that
there's a bigger plot.
The thing he was playing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The thing he was trying to defeat comes in, and it's like, oh shit, there's your next season. your next Rage of Bahamut series.
Well, I mean, I guess they could. They've already suggested that with this ancient, like older than gods and demons, fucking weapon.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Whatever it is, as I said, it better be satisfying. Warrant
this. Yeah, see, I've no idea whether if you play the game, you're already clued in on the lore.
Yeah, you got the clues just from like the little fucking lore descriptions on the cards or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
I know the cards in general are just there's demons, mankind, and gods. There's only those three different types of character. Mm. But yeah, I don't know anything about ancient weapons. I know the original characters from Genesis got cards, but I don't think anybody from introduced in this anime has had cards as far as
okay.
Imagine if they made like an anime series, but all the card stories in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Oh God! I mean, like I'd probably fucking love that show, but yeah.
I'm Rod and Captain. What's happening with him this day? Oh, he's making dinner now, and now the guys want to have some.
The saga of the tour bus from the underworld.
Yes.
Dear. Anyway, I guess spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it. The end piece, because the bit with the kid, like he's going back to heaven, and they've kind of resigned themselves to that, and him saying goodbye to Azazel, and him Nina kind of like bucking up just to kind of keep him happy. All really sad. But that end bit, fucking, like I was like, holy shit! I was just there for like maybe 5 minutes, just saying holy shit, and like fuck for. I did not see that coming. Like it was.
Well, did its job.
I know. Excellent. I'm just praising it.
Like for an episode, I was just kind of wavering on. It just hits you with that bit. Going, oh, okay, you got my attention back again.
Yeah, that it was quite a fucking hit. Like, yeah.
Okay, next up, we've got Welcome to the Ballroom, Heat 9, A Flower in a Frame, in which it's pretty much all about just their performance.
Yeah, it's just the one dance this time. I guess it's the finals, so yeah.
Oh, they're so close. They're so close to like having this big epiphany, you know. You can taste it.
Yeah, I had opened the page about lead and follow dance on Wikipedia.
Okay.
And I think it's been fairly true to how it works in ballroom dancing, as far as I understand, but I think this is the episode which it begins to fill in the details that the characters haven't been aware of.
Yeah.
Because this is where you see the communication between the lead and the follow within the dance. Mm. Because it explains that Mako is the one telling him where to go, what to do in the dance through her body language and the touching.
Mm.
She's communicating, and that is a thing which they apparently does happen in real ballroom. So it's just a thing they have not introduced into the show yet until this point.
Yeah, they're doing a good job of doing the kind of the shonen sports thing of giving you a bit each time in order to get how the function of it works. Yeah, yeah.
But this is the first time I think where it's properly communicated that it's a cooperative effort.
Yeah, it's fun. Some of the reactions of some of the characters in it, though, and some of the fun judges was saying, are you guys all robots? Because you got one guy, you know, like Marco and Tatara doing this, like, really nice promo stuff, was kind of like showing off Marco a bit more. That's the whole idea of this whole thing. And the guy on the scorecard was like, so I'm supposed to judge the leader, but it's almost like there's this other person there the leader is kind of dancing with, and I don't know what to do anymore. Am I supposed to mark that person now? It's really, really strange and off-putting to me.
I was wondering, was that supposed to be like the thing of the shonen fucking protagonist is the guy? It's the guy kind of thing. And then the guys who are the real experts, like your man's mother, are like, I wonder who else is fucking noticing this. The amount of fucking work that he's putting in. I mean, like, she's doing fucking wonderfully. He's showing off how good she is as a dancer. And he's letting her be as good as she is. But it like she can see the subtlety of what he's doing in order to enhance what she has.
I believe they literally have a visual effect against the people who do know what
yes.
he's doing.
Yes, they do. I think that was the kind of the thing of it. It's just kind of like, it's like, oh, the experts think it's all about the guy. But really, the real super experts who can't see the guy well, dancing, the it's like, yeah, it's both of them.
Is we know they're not experts, though, as well. Yeah, that's the yeah. thing. Because we know this is...
It's an amateur thing.
It's a fan-organized thing, essentially.
Like your man said himself, he wasn't that good a dancer, and even he's having trouble catching the lead dancer, not quite understanding what he's seeing. So he's not an expert, he's just passionate about it. Which, again, is probably why we should start, why we're starting a contest kind of here. The low levels.
Yeah.
But I did read, Niall, that apparently they did remove some of Shizuku's lines in earlier scenes.
Okay.
Not necessarily in this story, I think some other ones. And again, I don't know whether that is malicious or deliberate to lessen her character or just lessen her character because, as I've mentioned, neither of these two women are the main female lead.
So you think they cut out her lines that was setting her up to be the female lead?
Possibly, maybe, yeah. As I say, I wonder whether the intention was for her to be the female lead originally and... then the comic went in a different direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting, like rewriting but, the story of the comic a little. Maybe doing it in the service of the character.
Reading the interview on Anime News Network with is it the director?
The producer and the guy who plays stuff, like yeah. Tatara.
Right. Yeah, they clearly think Tatara is the main character and every character is in service of developing Tatara.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty short on
even though
it's just rare to see somebody admit it so blatantly in
the... yeah because generally it's kind of weird. The fandom who goes towards various characters, different people like that as their favorite character, but it's like no, this guy, everyone else, who cares?
It's not a weird thing now, this episode where it's about him like trying to take a back seat to try and push forward his other character then.
But I assume that is more from the comic, and I wonder how they'll handle, because I've seen pictures of the so-called real female lead, and she's definitely a much more expressive character than the two female leads you've currently got.
Okay,
I wonder how that will come across in the cartoon.
Yeah, I
don't think she's too far away now, and it is a 24 episode series. I hadn't realised that.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was actually browsing some manga there when I was like last in a bookshop there a week, and I kind of thumbed to Walking to the Bottom volume 3, and that was at the middle part of that volume was about 2 episodes ago.
So, okay.
Aha, uh-huh. Yeah.
So do you kind of extrapolate from there. Let's see, you know. Do you know what volume this other lady is introduced in?
I don't. I know she shows up during a competition that everyone goes to watch Sengoku take part.
So certainly after this part of the arc, yeah.
It might not be too far away then. I know Hyodo mentioned the competition that happened in October, that was a few months away, so maybe they go to that and then go to that, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's also when Tatara moves from middle school to high school as well.
Okay.
Well, they seem to be doing like big breaks between the contests. Like showing a little bit of the training montage, that kind of thing.
I know she's in the last bit of key art, even though her head's hidden by a glow, in the similar way how Tatara's head is hidden in this
by
episode.
Shadow. Yeah.
Well, give them the length. Maybe they might get far enough that they can bring in this new character. Because this is definitely the best it has been for me, anyway.
Okay.
I like that they are trying to make strides to improve characterization. Of everybody, really.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they do seem to be wanting to talk about those other characters. And it's like Brian might be saying, it might be in the rewriting of it in order to, oh, that wasn't the main character. Let's give her less screen time, so that's not as obvious that we fucked that up by changing.
As
the
far
writing.
As the next, when I see comments from manga readers, they're each chomping at the bit to get to Chinatsu.
Okay.
I believe everybody likes her a lot.
Okay.
Presumably, then if they mess it up, they'll tear the anime apart. That
sure.
Next up, My Hero Academia, episode 34, Gear Up for Final Exams. in, which opens with, I believe, was like a side story from the manga, where presumably was just an excuse to draw Midnight in even more revealing clothing.
Oh, I have.
Her old costume, which... I mean, like, her old costume did cover her boobs.
Yes, it was pretty much...
it was less revealing in some
like
regards.
Nudist beach type costume, right, from Kill Bill.
I suppose, but Daughter Power was
it's gas comes from her skin. Having more exposed skin means more gas can emerge, I guess.
I was gonna liken her, because she was making a reasonable argument of, it's like, well, I mean, like, a lot of super people need to have a lot of skin showing because it's based around their power. Like, obviously your man whose skin goes hard doesn't really wear much clothes. I mean, he wears pants and that's kind of it. But and it's like, oh, she's making a valid argument, but then Mount Lady's just being a dick because that's all she's capable of being.
Well, yeah, at least that's been established earlier.
Yeah.
And then we get to the final exams, where they think it's going to be one thing because they've spoken to previous years. But it turns out the principal has been hiding in Razorhead's clothes for some reason. Reveals that there's a change
so
of plan.
So cozy in here.
Yeah, he's like a little dog mouse man. It was probably just nice and warm there. And Razorhead can't exactly say no or he'll lose his job.
But yes, because they've been targeted by supervillains, they're going to have them team up 2-1 against their own teachers.
Mm.
And so they put them in all sorts of pairings and pair them off against various teachers. And what's the opening one? It's
Kirishima and the guy who eats sugar to make him strong.
Is it Sweets Man?
Yes. Yes, I think that's his superhero name. I need to add their superhero names to the notes. It's probably not worth it at the moment. It's only like 5 weeks.
But from that one, you can see, and obviously Midoriya pegs it, and Recovery Girl like says, yeah, you've got it down. Like, they've paired him against the Concrete Toss guy because it's Mentos.
Yes.
Mentos, sorry. I thought I had it wrong. Because it's like their powers will wear down quickly. They don't have much stamina, whereas his thing is like, you won't even get close to me.
As long as I have concrete, cement, I can keep going.
So they're not even going like, oh, we're giving you a slight thing, but because we're all wearing these fucking training weights again. But the kind of thing of is like, oh, they're not going to fucking take it easy on you. They've specifically set these up so that this will be difficult for you.
Yeah, they have a choice of either putting a handcuff on a teacher or running.
And only one of them needs to escape. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's combination of like teamwork and stuff. And I did like the kind of thing of, it's like, oh, I generally paired them off by grades, or obviously in those two guys' case, because they're both guys who get worn down quickly. So they have that in common. They have to overcome the same weakness. But with Midoriya, he's teamed up with the guy who he gets on with the least.
Yes.
Which is...
And also they've got to fight All Might.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And before that, we have like a rundown of how everyone did in their midterm. So we learn who is the smartest and stupidest.
I did like the introduction. Like it's not just the name and the powers and everything. It's just like also their grade, where they are ranked in the class of intelligence.
Fucking Mineta, top 10, did 9.
Yeah, and they mentioned
you,
like,
smart.
You're only a good kind of character if you're stupid.
This is his arc, guys. This is the first chance he gets to shine in this arc.
And him and fucking, like, when it was Sarah was like, he doesn't say you're a little creep. He says something like that. I was just like, he is. I'm glad you're fucking saying it, Sarah. fuck's sake.
Yeah. And then fucking Momo is now finally, I've been so kind of ineffectual for the last few weeks. It feels like, it's like, now everyone's like, can we study your house? Yes, of course you can. What kind of tea do you like? Or just one of one kind? Oh, yes, we got many.
Give me the Harry tea.
I'll have the halls opened up, she says, and then they all go, hang on.
Yeah, it's...
How rich is
you
she?
Can see, like, and it's kind of like from the opening and stuff, her arc is that she's got the talent and she's got the, obviously, the book smarts and everything, but less confidence in the practical stuff.
Yeah.
That's what caught her in the tournament as well. The sports day. So yeah, you can see that's kind of where they're going with her. So it's kind of interesting that she got paired off with Todoroki. Like the guys who were like the highest rated, you know, the guys who didn't even have to do a test to get in, get paired off, which seems cheap, but they're both coming from kind of different places. So that should be good.
Whereas poor Ochako is stuck with Yuga.
I guess he has to be paired off with someone, but...
Well, we can see put all that like that combat training to good use, maybe.
I know, but she's stuck with a really crap partner.
Let's let him hang back and shoot things. She'll go in there and start fucking digging the head off him.
Yeah, I can't remember how much time each of these fights got in the comic. Except for your little pervs. I know he got a long time.
Oh, no. I hate that guy so much.
Because it was the point at which I was like, oh, yes, you finally get to see him think in combat
and
figure things out. Because as we learned earlier in this episode, he is smart.
Yeah. So
can he apply that in a combat situation?
Give him a chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, because he did well against the League of Supervillains, teamed up with Suyu and Midoriya, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
The three of them worked well as a team.
He's still a little bastard, though.
You do have a good strategy on the sports day during the cavalry battle.
he's devious, yeah. I believe, is the word to describe him.
He's a Piccolo of the class.
Hey, fucking don't lower Piccolo standing, man. Come on.
But elevate Minerva.
Okay, next up and finally, it's Vatican Miracle Examiner, Episode 9, The Decapitating Clown and the Tale of Solomon.
A much more sensible title than last week's.
Yes. Now, first up, I'm now no longer bothered about the ending last week's because, despite what the synopsis I'd read had told me, hadn't told me, I looked at the cover of Volume 3 and Julia is slap bang on the cover of Volume 3 of the novels, of which this one is.
Okay.
I was like... Okay, that's why they don't need to explain much in that story, because somehow he's showing up in this one. Don't know how.
There's a lot happening in this, and there's a lot of like, because it starts off with a fucking Blair Witch fucking thing, but with a murderous clown.
Yes.
And I was like, what the hell is like, boys? I got a miracle for yourself. There's a clown murdering people, and I was like, that's not a miracle.
It's a miracle. He's got away for so long.
That has nothing to do with why they're there. But obviously, it'll probably have everything to do with why they're there. But yeah, very, very strange opening.
And then, of course, it's like Robert is going, hey, Ryan, check this out. I've been reading a paper like recently, and I keep seeing this clown thing pop up everywhere. I wonder if it's got something to do with this case.
No, there's only a clown on the outside of the church. It's probably nothing to do with it.
It's only like a local legend about a clown that kills people. And
they only have a statue of the clown with his giant scythe on the fucking church. It's probably nothing.
It's probably nothing to do with this kind of pattern of weird images appearing in different parts of the world simultaneously.
Nah, can't be anything important. Wouldn't worry about it.
But the miracle, which had previously been examined and determined a miracle, but the priest of the church had not signed off on it, is in this church... Is it every day?
It's every morning. Every morning mass.
After mass.
I thought it was during
mass. They hear a horn.
It doesn't matter.
They hear a horn, and then the crucifix is doused in light which of varying kinds, depending on who you are.
Yeah. And the horn, they can't tell what direction it's coming from with the microphones, and... The light doesn't show up on cameras, and it looks different to everyone. But it's generally like some sort of rainbow fabulousness.
Yes.
Which is an odd one, yeah. I'll admit.
The horn has something to do with the clown, because we hear the horn sounding on the found footage before he comes along and starts murdering everybody.
Yeah. And then the light
and
thing?
And then...
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget.
First of all, learn that there's a massive library, so therefore Roberto's like, oh, books, my favourite thing.
Oh, yes. I mean, please, show it away.
Oh, and he finds the same book twice.
He does, yes. Mm. It's a collection of fairy tales, one of which is the correct version of the fairy tales, and then the other one has weird details added to them, most of which involve decapitating clown.
Yeah, it's like all the fairy tales are written. The decapitating clown is in every single one of them. What was the story where...
Oh, it's the Solomon yes. one. There's like some very specific instructions in the weird one.
Yeah, like boil yeah. yourself in a pot of oil is part one. Part two is the same, stay on the good road, not the old road or
that's
something.
That's sound advice. It holds up no matter what kind of story you're telling. So I don't
yeah. And then part three, what was the different story?
I can't remember. I know there's other stuff with in this. They mentioned a alchemist. Name begins with a P.
The amount of times they mention an alchemist in this fucking show.
And that he captured a demon in a orb, which wasn't what he claimed. That's what other people claimed that he'd done, actually. Mm. But for him, it was just the name he gave the universal solvent that he was seeking. As all alchemists did. Gotta find that panacea. Give me that panacea. I could do it.
Yeah, you should do. There's also like a lingering shot of some guys loading some things off of trucks or onto trucks. So I wonder how this will tie into a world like corporate conspiracy.
I was wondering, should I rewind that and look at it upside down? But I was like, it's just the clown check marks. It has something to do with the clown conspiracy, which is a phrase that I've just said, and it's weird when I hear it back.
The clown is a harlequin, but it's specifically...
It's like a specific guy, isn't it?
It's, yeah, but it's specifically the type drawn by a particular... or painted by a particular painter.
Oh, don't think I've got
it.
Yeah.
I think it is in the Harlequin wiki page. Cezanne's.
Okay.
Oh, that guy, the sea.
Yeah, so it's the red and black diamond pattern rather than the traditional multicolored one.
Yeah.
Your typical Harlequin would wear.
I assume he doesn't have the scythe in the classical paintings.
No.
He's got a stick.
No,
you want a scythe on.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so everyone has to be locked in their rooms at night.
Yeah, that's not weird at all. And again, Roberto makes the thing, I was like, oh, this is a really good thing. Everyone must have their own room. It's more like a prison, though, when you think about it, when looking at the bars.
And also means you can't do anything about the murder you're hearing happening outside.
Yeah, you have to wait for the cops to come and go like, hey, it's the cops here. Yeah, and they're constantly wandering off at night so far, so maybe this is a good thing to stop them doing their regular tricks.
And the head priest has disappeared, and there's a dead albino child.
Yeah, which is weird, because there wasn't an albino child there earlier. initially, your man sees it as his brother, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes,
it
does.
Doesn't the local detective say, this couldn't be an albino child, we have no victim of albino children living anywhere in this area for the past like 100 years or something like that. Very particular figure. This guy just can't get from somewhere else. Not from around
there's
here.
Definitely no albino child around here. We know that much. I am an expert on albino children, and there's none living here.
And it was good when the cop turns up. He basically yells at the priest, don't touch that corpse.
Yeah, and they're like, but we're just trying to determine the cause of fucking death.
I know you're priests. We're from the Vatican. Please. I know you're priests and you compel the soft mysteries, but I must ask you to step back.
Yeah. And then the horn sounds, and then the cop sees a gold light over Jesus, unlike the rainbow lights that other people had seen.
So I assume it's some sort of like fucking optical illusion that the horn sets off like the inner ear and fucking messes with your eyes. And the reason the head priest can't see it is because he's colorblind with yellow or something.
Yeah.
Something stupid like that is what I'm thinking.
Simple.
Oh,
well, it's probably something to do with the architecture of the building.
Yeah, it reverberates through the building to make this fucking thing vibrate your brain at a certain frequency to make you see colors on Jesus. Or something. I don't fucking know.
Yes.
Something mad as a bag of hammers.
That may turn out to be either a side effect of some evil thing that's going on elsewhere, sure. Which involves dead albinos.
Oh, I think the child has been bleached. Clowns. That's what I'm going to assume it is. like just something farcical and weird, because that's the kind of show it is. I'm just making up crazy conspiracy theories in my head and seeing, like, let's see if that one's true, because I think that's the best.
Oh, there's a, this does have a long introduction of many suspects as well.
Oh my god, yeah, it has a run through a priest who it could be.
all the biblical names, Father like Isaiah, Father Abraham, I think, okay. Job.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Well, it could be any of you fuckers. You're just smiling away, thinking it's a miracle.
It'd be none of you guys. This all turned part of a massive plot by the Masons to destroy print media.
It's a character we haven't met yet. Unlike Scooby Doo, it's not. You're not necessarily.
Yeah. Come on, Dwayne. We discussed this last week. It will be all but one of them.
Yeah, I suppose it could be all of them. Yeah, everyone's involved, including the entire congregation. Oh, dear.
I'm probably Haraga somehow, but he's forgotten about it. You know?
Oh, yeah, due to trauma. I'm still enjoying this show. It's still fucking crazy, dude.
It is. I like the design of the cop in this as well, because he looked like the sort of like the one-off cop you'd get in a loop out of the third TV special. He turns out to be a villain.
Yeah. Oh, because of his fabulous hair, is it? Yeah.
That haircut's not regulation for the police. That's definitely not.
Maybe it's regulation in Italy. You don't know, man.
Well, maybe we'll find out. Right at the start, they're having breakfast. And Haraga's got this bib on, and Robert's got his Vatican pity on.
His Vatican apron, yeah. I fucking love that, because they have, what's his name, the locked up super fucking Vatican prisoner, Lauren. They have Lauren locked up, and I think Lauren hung up because he didn't want to hear the amount of compliments he was going to throw at Roberto, like straight after food. He's like, ah, fuck that guy, I'm so jelly.
It's on the phone, and then like they're just like pretty much ignoring him until he speaks up. Like,
he's just been there while they're cooking,
watching them eat breakfast. It's like, come on, guys. You know what? You know I'm in jail. This isn't fair. I get 3 bowls of gruel a day.
They give me everything I want, but, you know, I don't get to have a lovely continental breakfast.
Well, Niall, I noticed this novel is based on, it's called The Golden Darkness. So you might be on something with Freemason. If it's a reference to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
We've had Nazis around, so we gotta go, like, you know.
We've had Nazis and aliens covered, so we're kind of fucking.
You've already done that. You have to go just, like, you know, the whole New World Order type of stuff now.
Sure.
Yeah, so I've no idea how Julia ties into this, but apparently he does.
He's dressed as the clown, obviously.
Well, that was where my mind immediately went, but that's pretty fast acting.
It's pretty fast acting, but it's as crazy as this show could be. Maybe it's his other twin. Fucking know.
Yeah, I presume that videotape was from a while back because it was on VHS.
Yeah, it's 4K. Right.
That's true.
And it had that standard VHS video effects. I've seen that on something else this week. I can't remember who it was, but I was like, I'm pretty sure the interference is at exactly the same time and exactly the same
place. It's the same filter they're using. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. Mm. And I was having fun just when I read the title. I was like, yeah, we're on something here. And also, the fairy tale from Picatari last week showed up in this.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It's like this haranguing British series playing, you know, when Roberto would give him a title and it says, you mean the one where the king has the long ears and then the barber was a secret and he's got to have acting to get down the hole to get rid of it? That story? Yes, that one, Haraga.
Like, oh, okay. Boy. Here's a crazy conspiracy theory. What if the Vatican miracle examiners are aware and are watching the currently coming out anime? So they just watched that episode of Picatara last week. I don't know.
Oh, yes, that's possible.
Anything's possible at this stage, man.
It is. I just watched the last episodes of Twin Peaks, so yeah, anything's possible. And then I was reading people discussing whether or not the clown in the new version of It was too scary.
I mean,
most people seem to agree that it is, but my point was also that they've moved it forward to 1989, which is post John Wayne Gacy, and a bunch of horror films about clowns. So it's like, whereas when it was set in the late 50s or
it was 60s, the first scary clown.
It makes sense. But, well, yeah, it makes sense. But it makes sense that, because obviously the kid sees the clown in the sewer offering to give him his paper boat back. And they were discussing, like, that's far too scary. A kid wouldn't go down there. But I was thinking, but in the 50s and 60s, at the peak of Bozo the Clown's beginning to spread and become nationally famous, American clowning was at its height. So it would be as scary to go and get a thing from a clown in a sewer.
They should have just gone forward about 4 or 5 more years to that first episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark had the scary clown on it. Then it would have made sense.
Or they could have made the clown into a Ninja Turtle and then any kid would have followed it into a
That's well, exactly. That's what it should be in 1989. You're right, yeah. Jane. It should not be pretending to be a clown. He should be pretending to be a...
You all float down here, dude.
Should be offering him a sewer piece.
Oh, dear.
Check it out. It's rat and broken glass pizza.
On that note, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
We're back. Well, I'm back. I was on holiday for a month, pretty much, and I'd meant to get something done in the interim, but, you know, things get out of hand. And yeah. I needed a break, so I'm glad I'm back and re-energized, and I'm going to get back into shape. Get us back into shape, and as promised, many weeks ago, we will be doing the two bits of double bill of fighting tournament short anime things. One is, of course, Trava Fish Planet, and then the other will be Kizuna Ichigeki. Look forward to those sometime soon. Sooner than last month has been, so I apologize for that.
And if you can't get enough, Niall, he's coming up, hopefully. Nothing happens to him in between because we haven't recorded it yet. On the next episode of Dynamite in the Brain, your name.
The clown at my window. Oh, God, no!
And hopefully we'll have another guest as well. But I won't say anything yet. She has confirmed, but things can happen in the meantime. Yes, so find out whether I liked it or not. Find out whether Haybot had ruined it for me before anyone else see it. And see how angry Anthony will get at my reaction to it. Because he cried. And then after that will be, I believe we're going to do a famous anime podcast about time travel anime. And they won't all be time bokans. Oh, they could have all been time bokans. Otherwise, we'll be back here next week with more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.